tap into the auxiliaries in the post-war period.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I usually catch it. I watch, but I missed it.
I think I was just saying that by the time 1948 came along, we were in a very strong position. We had good auxiliaries, and they were full of members and who were enthusiastic. And I believe I mentioned that our conventions were very well attended.
Yeah.
And the union men came to speak at our meetings, and we, some of us, went to speak at their conventions. I mean, at, on a convention level. I didn't, but Ernie was a speaker at our, some of ours. And then when the 1948 thing happened, the auxiliaries were all disbanded. They just went and disappeared. And I think that if there's auxiliaries in the IWE now, they're formed out of totally different people. Maybe not totally, but you know, different people.
Mm-hmm. Why did the new leadership of the IWA disband the auxiliaries?
They didn't.
They didn't.
When the struggle was going on to get out of the United States fiasco, you know,
mm-hmm.
And all the things happened that happened.
See.
Then the auxiliaries couldn't do. They were impotent. They couldn't go down. They couldn't do anything. So they, when it was obvious that the new union was going to be defeated and the IWA was going to continue on through the United States, then the auxiliaries just simply didn't meet anymore.
Right.
That's how it happened.
See, the thing was that the United States government passed this law. What the hell was it they call it now again?
Was it Taft-Hartley?
Hmm?
Taft-Hartley?
Taft-Hartley was one part, but there was another one beyond that, too. And we got the entire international against us because we didn't believe in that we should have to sign the kind of a declaration that the people in the United States did, because
mm-hmm.
we weren't United States, we were in Canada, we were Canadian citizens, and of course they put the pressure on,
mm-hmm.
and we couldn't go down to conventions. And we couldn't, nor did we have the United States government, we had the international down there, we had the CIO helping the international. And here in Canada we had the dissidents,
mm-hmm.
the small group that didn't go along with us, who was very vociferous. And the Canadian Congress of Labour, the provincial government, and the federal government. These were all the enemies to our point of view at that time, you see. And we had, we had about 28,000 members in the union at the time. And when the break came, we got 19,000 signed cards who declared that they were going to go out of the IWA and go into the new union that we was going to set up. Now, we made a mistake, there's no doubt about it. We should have fought it out inside of the union,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't. And we knew that they were going to do all kinds of things. They were going to get injunctions, and they were going to sue us, and they were going to, you know, this all was implicit in what they were doing. So I suppose that some got panicked on the thing, and, you know, and couldn't see the way out, so they decided, well, okay, we'll set up our own union. Well, it would have been fine if we had been able to tell the provincial government, look, we got the majority of people here now, we want to be certified as the representative for men.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They just stuck with the old thing, even if there was no no support for it, but they just stuck with the dissidents.
Right.
Consequently, after about 3 years, well, the WIUC went out of existence.
I should have given you something to eat. Oh, no, I'm fine. Did you have some lunch?
Anyway, this was the end of the union, but it was also the end of the not the end of the auxiliary movement, because they did have some auxiliaries that they set up in the New Westminster and Mission.
But as I say, they were not the same people.
No, not the same people at all.
Perhaps here and there was one of the old ones.
What, when you sort of review the history up to the split, and I was just curious as to what role the women's auxiliaries played in that process up to the split. Like, were most auxiliaries or most auxiliary members sympathetic to forming a new union? Or
yes, as a matter of fact, they were most supportive.
Mm-hmm.
In the convention that we had in Vancouver Island, at that time, we had a convention at Galliano, didn't we?
No, that was it.
That was a council meeting.
It was a council meeting, but there was a convention in the
yeah.
Council.
Well, whatever. They were very supportive. Very supportive, I'd say.
Why was that? Do you know?
Well, I think the women by that time, you know. They had become very conscious of a lot of things that they had never thought about before, and they took a very good viewpoint. As a matter of fact, you know, it may look on the face of things that the union itself didn't support the leaders, but that's not true. They did, and the women in the council meetings, and any experience that I had in a meeting, there were, by this time, you know, I would say that there were all kinds of women who were very well qualified to get up and make a very good speech, and they had positive opinions, and they were real people, and they knew where they stood.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that, mind you, it doesn't matter where you go in a crowd of women, they are not all sheep, but they don't have all the same ideas. But generally speaking, I always have had a feeling that the women would have stood behind the men right to the bitter end. And I'm sure of it. If you get a lost sheep here and there, well, that's natural. But
mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, I think that they were very supportive, and not blindly supportive,
mm-hmm.
but they had something to say about it too.
Were there ever conflicts of opinion between men in the union or union policy in the women's auxiliary?
I guess so. I don't know.
Do you remember?
As far as I know, we never got any directives to change our way of doing things.
The women had their organization, and they were free to discuss anything that they
I
wanted.
Think that as the years went by, I think that the auxiliaries received a good deal of respect,
mm-hmm.
and growing respect,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the beginning up until growing respect for our organization as a whole, for the way it was run, and the type of people that were in it,
mm-hmm.
and everything. I think it was a very, very good organization in those years.
So basically, most of the auxiliaries were to knowledge behind the split process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, so that also would make help to. So what happened when the split took place? Like the auxiliaries in each local would have to decide which way they were going to go, I guess. With.
Well, I guess so.
What happened in Vancouver? What was that process like?
We didn't have any. I think it was really different than that.
Yeah.
You see, for instance, there's an element of time, and time goes by, and you don't have a meeting because you don't know where you stand, right? Not you don't know where you stand personally, but you don't know what's going on right now. What should we call a meeting for? You know, because everything was in a state of flux, and. It was just impossible to get the women out to make a meeting on something that would grab your interest, and because what could you do?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do anything. We're in a position where we're impotent, we're hopeless because we couldn't do anything.
So it sort of went under.
Yes, and yeah. When you don't call a meeting, you just go. And now other places, maybe they had meetings on Vancouver Island, and maybe they said, shall we stay in and shall we not stay in? But if they had one of those kind of meetings in Vancouver, I wasn't at it.
Well, they had that kind of meetings in Vancouver.
I don't remember it. I just don't remember it.
No, there was meetings. But, you know, as the fact that the, regardless, what the membership said, the authorities over all these that I enumerated, the
mm-hmm.
government and the labor department and the unions, you know, the Canadian Congress and the IWA and the CIO and the United States government and all that, well, they
mm-hmm.
just stood pat, you see, and they had to, of course, their organizers out there. The organizers that came into BC to change the minds of the people came from the United States.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There was a whole flock of them that came over there. They were trained agents of the United States government.
That must have been a really difficult process to have been that involved in the auxiliary and then for it to...
Yes.
So what did you do? Right?
Well, personally, I was all tied up with supporting my children.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept on writing for the paper until it was no use.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't aware, I'm not aware of being called to a meeting and not going. So I really cannot answer the question.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. What positions did you hold in the auxiliary elected positions?
Well, I was just a member of the local, and then I think I was a secretary of the local for some time. And then there was a convention, and I got elected as a secretary treasurer for the BC Council. And that was all I had. Oh, I think I was a... I'm not sure if I ever did anything else.
Were there political groups that played a role in the auxiliary at all?
You like the CCF and that?
And the LPP.
And the LPP. Well, some of the women had husbands that belonged to those parties,
mm-hmm.
but they never had any direct role in what we did,
mm-hmm.
unless it was because that woman would have certain viewpoints and she would get up and express her viewpoints. No reference was ever made to any political affiliation,
right.
You know, that I know of.
Right. Yeah, because I know women like Mona Morgan were members of the LCP.
Yeah.
As well as their husbands being there.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. And was that a part of the differences or conflicts within the auxiliary, or some of the debates, people being CCF members versus LPP members versus Liberal Party members, or...
I don't think it was a real problem. I don't think it was a real problem. Not in our group, anyway. Maybe in some of the other groups they had problems. But you see, those people who belonged to the CCF and the LPP, they generally speaking, they had some pretty good minds, and they had a they had a presence that they were sure of themselves. And they could speak well,
mm-hmm.
and they were not in any way obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you care, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I'm at the end of my questions, so if you have anything that you feel needs to be added about that experience for you.
I'm glad that I had that experience because it changed my life. It made me realize that I could take hold of my own life and do something with it, that I wasn't just a chip on a river.
Yeah. And did it give you skills?
Oh, definitely it did. If I hadn't probably gone to the, you know, being a member in the auxiliary,
mm-hmm.
I may not have ever taken that job. I went down to that office in Lulu Island there, you know. And they were just starting a new paper. They'd only issued one issue, I think, and presented myself and said that I'd like to work for them, and I got a job. I would have never had the nerve to do that if I hadn't been a member of the auxiliary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I had a big experience there, you know. It was lots of fun. I used to go to all the council meetings, and I used to go and cover the weddings and funerals, and if there was an accident, I went and phoned it in. As a matter of fact, you know, this is absolutely beside the point and nothing to do with it, but just something to remember something. I was down at the end of the road, and I was taking down in my little black book all the things about this accident. And I went home. I lived about a mile and a half away, and I was walking. So I went home as fast as I could, and I phoned the Vancouver Sun. And I think I did that a couple of times. And they used to print all my reports about the council meetings in the Sun. You
Is
see?
That like this Richmond City Council? Or?
Yeah. And that would be reported once a week in the Sun. So when I phoned in these other things, you know, they knew who I was. And I just did it because I thought it would be fun. And so I got a phone call from the Vancouver Sun and asked me if I'd like to come down and have an interview. They'd like to, the possibility of getting a job on the Vancouver Sun as a reporter.
Well.
And my husband wouldn't let me. Oh, gee, I could have killed him. He wouldn't let me. He said, I'm away enough as it is to stay home and cook the dinner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, and we did have some other experiences, too, you know. During one of the strikes, wasn't it, Ernie, that Mona and I had that radio program?
Radio program.
It was Mona's program, 5 Minutes with Mona, and she took me on as a partner, and we had the script, and we talked all about these issues, you know, for 5 minutes on the radio every morning. Every morning.
That's a lot of work, actually.
Yeah, darn right it is.
So how would you prepare this script? Would you research things? Or?
Well, we had a whole lot of stuff in our heads. We just typed it all, you know. And what's coming up, you know, what's coming up? Well, we'll write about that. And it was very well done. I think Mona did most of it, if I remember right. She's got a clever little brain, you know.
Yeah, I figured that out talking to her.
Yeah, she did a lot of work, won't it?
Well, that's interesting. So did you end up working at the Richmond paper for a long time?
Until I left my husband.
Yeah.
I did. And I enjoyed it. And at the same time, I was doing the work for the lumber worker. And I had this old typewriter I bought for I don't know what, and I was on the dining room table and I was learning to type at the same time. So, oh dear.
Was that paper organized? Like, was there a union there?
I don't think so. It was just a little paper starting up.
Okay. Have you had any other union experiences since the auxiliary?
Well, I've never. What have I been doing since then? No, I worked. I worked in a bakery and an umbrella factory and things like that. And there was no question of union. Because of working in the Boeing's, I guess that's how come I got that job in the furniture making factory. And I was running one of those saws, making a big piece of plywood, and you cut all the pieces to patterns. One of those. Oh, I did a lot of things. Worked for dry cleaners. But no union.
Okay.
I don't know, the auxiliary especially. I think you get involved with other organizations like the housewives organization. And then, you know, for lowering prices and things, they have
campaigns.
You know. We do things like that. And, you know, on May Day, we'd be down at Stanley Park and there'd be somebody speaking. And one year, I got shoved up there. Oh, I could have killed Mona for doing that to me. She shoved me up to that damn microphone and told me to say something about joining the auxiliaries. I don't know what I said, but I said something. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. It was good. And we, since Ernie and I have been married and we had a son, we've gone to the labor things that go on in Vancouver. And I remember taking our son when he was a couple years old and younger in his buggy and traipsing across the Patullo Bridge. No, not the Patullo Bridge. The
First Narrows
Bridge. What's the name of that bridge? Well, anyway, that stupid bridge. Into Stanley Park, you know.
Yeah.
And joining the parade. But since we've been up, living up the coast, we did a little writing. Sent some things down to the Trib once in a while. I guess we should have looked in the lumber worker. There must be a bunch of stuff in there.
I'll look through for stuff that you wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because